If you're rocking to get up and it's not a rocking chair, it's time for the Joint Relief Institute. Fast relief, covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
When we pulled into the garage, I had white-knuckled about 20 minutes of that trip.
Yep.
I think we probably drove about 25, 30 miles an hour at most.
Yeah.
And we drove behind quite a few salt trucks and snow plows.
And actually, the drive was cleaner than any of the surface streets that we were on.
Because of all the traffic and just a little
and
bit of...
And the snow plows,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, but it was snowing hard. You'll see my pictures. I just posted our pictures en route to the radio station tonight. Nothing real exciting, but if you were thinking about leaving the house, look at the pictures. Maybe that'll make you stay in.
Yeah. It should.
You're looking over my shoulder smiling.
Yeah, I am, because I think Julian is trying his best to stay awake. And the lights were going on and off and on and off. And I thought he was trying to establish kind of a sort of a disco atmosphere over on your side of the glass. Is that what you were going for, Julian?
No, it was Morse code.
Morse code, right.
No, I was just trying to get the lights to work because there's no lever. You just got to wing it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's too bright.
Yeah.
Okay.
They paid extra, too, for that winging feature. I love that.
And didn't you say that you did the same thing we did, about 30 miles an hour coming in?
Yeah, give or take, about 25, 30.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Luckily, everyone else was.
And that's coming from the western suburbs. Was it snowing when you drove in?
Oh, yeah. It was coming down.
Yeah.
Luckily, it's light, so it just the wind kind of blew it on.
It's very pretty. You can see in some of my pictures the way the camera, the phone caught the angles through the windshield, it very glistening, very attractive, as long as you're inside looking out at it.
Ron, you came in earlier, so you didn't have to deal with the stuff you're going to have to deal with going home.
No, it was a nice drive in for me, but I'm expecting a whole different experience on the way back.
Hey, we're all very lucky. I just looked at the text line at 312-981-7200, and Jim in Wisconsin said, after suffering some frozen pipes today, that's like one of my biggest fears.
Ugh.
I'm up and down through three levels because we have a basement that is partially, I don't know what you call it. It's not completely underground. It's half.
Yeah.
What's a word for that, Bob? Halfway underground?
Yeah.
Okay.
Split.
Split.
That's the technical term.
I'm running up and down the stairs to be sure that there's a little bit of water trickling in the faucets and that the cabinet doors are open. And boy, I was shocked at how cold the basement was. And so that got me scared because heat rises and the furnaces are down there. And I thought, okay, I just need to go to work so I don't have to worry about this.
But also, we found out something earlier this week, and I don't know how many cities, villages do this, but we just found out that our village has a service where if you're going to go out of town and it's cold weather, you call the water department, they will come over, they will turn off your water.
At the B box.
So you don't have to worry about your pipes during the cold weather, and then you come home and you call them and they come over and they turn it back on.
Of course, they don't say anything about coming back over to turn it back on.
Oh.
They'll turn it off for you, and then you get back, and you're like, can I have my water back on, please?
There's a charge for that.
Yeah, that's right. And then it depends upon just how badly you want your water, how much it costs you to get your water turned back on.
How thirsty are you?
Really?
Okay. By the way, a little later tonight, we're going to talk Oscars with Ron.
Mm-hmm.
And Ron, I'm forcing myself to save this for that conversation.
Okay.
But we saw the best movie of the year.
In our opinion. We haven't seen them all, so.
Oh, so did I.
Yeah. Did you?
I saw the best movie of the year,
good.
Too.
Yeah. All right.
We'll compare notes.
Yes.
Yeah, coming up tonight, Ron's going to put on his movie hat, which you do now every Thursday on Lisa Dent's show, right?
Yeah, every Thursday around 3:15 or 3:45. It kind of fluctuates depending on the day. But, yeah, it's a lot of fun to talk movies. It's a great outlet for me because I talk about movies all the time to anybody who's within, hearing distance. So it's nice to have somebody ask me questions about them.
And speaking of Lisa Dent, go to WGN Radio and do a search for Lisa Dent, and you will see she has posted another update on how she's doing. And
she's back on the farm.
She's back on the farm, but she's still dealing with some real, real serious stuff.
It was described as PTSD.
Yeah, it was a bad accident.
Yeah, horrible accident. Yeah. And every time I come in here to the station, I'm using the kind of suitcase that she stumbled over with that extended handle. Mm-hmm. And tonight I laid the suitcase down. The handle was already extended and I was putting stuff in it. And I realized that's exactly what happened to her. She had the handle extended, had it opened on the floor, putting stuff in it. She was coming to Chicago for a long weekend and for a remote broadcast. And when she turned around, that's when she stumbled over that handle. It's just the freakiest accident
and it
changes your life.
If you don't know, she literally has had to have her shoulder replaced.
Yeah.
I'd never heard of such a thing.
Ugh.
I know. Eek.
Yeah, so think some good thoughts, send some good vibes, and if you can, go to WGN Radio and read what she wrote. Lisa is one of the good ones.
And if you follow her on Facebook, she is reading your posts on Facebook, so she will know if you reach out to her via Facebook.
Speaking of Facebook, we have a few thoughts about Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way.
That is the F word we're going to be using, right?
Yes.
So Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
We may mention a couple times tonight that we would like you to check out our blog and our Blue Sky page.
Why?
Well, first of all, our blog is at stephenjohnny.wordpress.com. And our Blue Sky page, oh, it's a whole big thing. Just do a search for Steve and Johnny on Blue Sky. Because we're not going to be doing as much on the Steve and Johnny Facebook page as we have previously done because they're getting really wonky.
Glitchy.
For some reason, and we have no clue why. And for those of you that are saying, well, ask Dr. Patrick Crispin. We did. He has no clue what's going on either. We're trying to figure it out.
He's been working on it, yeah.
When we do a post on our Steve and Johnny Facebook page. Now, it doesn't impact our personal pages. And by the way, for those of you who are wondering, our personal pages are for family and friends.
Mm-hmm.
But the Steve and Johnny show page, for some reason, a couple things are happening. One, when a post goes up, like we were talking about Lisa Dent, and we were trying to do a link to Lisa's post, the picture of the WGN Radio page would come up. The link would not work.
Mm-hmm.
And in the lower right-hand corner, it would say send message. So if you click on this, it takes you to Facebook Messenger. We have no clue what's going on. And it only started, it's only with posts that have been made since January 10th.
Wow, that long?
I know.
We're the 24th.
I know. And the posts were fine at that point, but within the past week, for some reason, from January 10th to now, it's really wonky.
Well, there's some change that's going on because I'm picking up, because I was doing some research myself, and people are saying, why can't I suddenly, it seems like I can't comment on posts.
Yeah.
And it turns out that apparently Facebook has decided that some of the people who are posting are oversharing. So they're going to say, no, you can't do that just now. You have to wait a while.
Didn't it say that something like this person had too many posts?
Yes,
that
too many
day.
Posts.
What? I thought Facebook kind of wanted people to post.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
And that was an official statement from Facebook to this one person that I stumbled across that was having this frustrating experience.
But as of now, we have over 10,000 people that follow us on the Steve and Johnny Facebook show page. As many of you as possible, please, because honestly, we don't trust Facebook anymore. They're getting really wonky in a lot of areas. So if you could check out our blog, which is stephenjohnny.wordpress.com, and do a search for Steve and Johnny on Blue Sky. Those are the places we're going to be posting a whole lot more. I have no clue.
Well, Ken just texted and said, thanks for talking about Facebook. I'm so frustrated. He said, I suddenly cannot see previous posts. He said, I'm blaming the Russians.
Yep. Oh, and then there was another thing. There was a a comment on our Facebook page
right.
that I was trying to reply to. And I tried it both as me, as Steve King, and as administrator from the Steve and Johnny Show. I would put the comment up. I would see it. I would go away. I would come back. The comment would be gone.
But then
I would repost the comment, and then I would see the comment twice.
Mm-hmm.
Then I would go away. Then I would come back. Then the comments would be gone.
Because Facebook realized, oh, it's that guy that puts up too many comments. We gotta limit him.
But I haven't had any kind of that message.
I know. It's craziness.
So point is...
And we've said it forever. We don't want to rely on Facebook. That's why we're expanding into other social media because we don't know what's going to happen with them. And a lot of folks don't want to get involved with Facebook. We have friends that don't choose to be active on Facebook.
And it's just I have no – this doesn't appear to be political like a lot of stuff on Twitter, which is why we don't post there anymore.
Right.
But Facebook is just being strange. So please, if you can – check out our blog. Check out our Blue Sky page. We also have a ton of videos. Look up Steve and Johnny Show on YouTube. And those are the places that we're going to be posting a whole lot more from now on. And as I said, we have over 10,000 people on Facebook. If you would be nice enough to check out some of the other sites we just talked about, we'd really appreciate it because...
If they ever shut us down, you'll know where to find us then.
Exactly. Oh, and I guess we should share with the class, we have had a change of plans.
Oh, yes. Answering the question, why aren't you in Florida? We got a couple of those on text tonight.
We had planned, originally, we'd planned to be in Florida next week for about a month. And long story short, talking with some of our friends, and one of them, Chris Smith, he's a meteorologist with Panhandle Weather, and... Weather in the panhandle is going crazy, too. It's going to be in the 70s on Sunday and then maybe in the 20s on Monday. And if I have to live with 20-degree temperatures or below, I want it to be in Chicago. It feels colder and it goes right through you when you're right off the Gulf Coast.
And we have a furnace there, unlike some of our friends who don't, which I hope they're going to a hotel or something if it's going to be as cold as they're saying it may be next week.
And you're saying, well, why don't they have furnaces in Florida? A lot of houses, like our little yellow house, were built in the 50s or 60s.
Well, when your dad moved to that house in 71, it had a wall space heater.
Yeah, that's all they needed.
It was just 3 foot tall, and it was built into the wall, and it was a space heater. And jalousie windows, which also let a lot of cold come through.
Yeah.
But I guess... temperatures were warmer back then.
And since then, we have completely redone the house, and we have a furnace. And
insulation
everything.
And all that good stuff.
But yeah, there are a lot of people in Florida without furnaces right now.
Yep.
Well, a lot of people have been looking to weathermen because, oh boy, are we dealing with some fun stuff, boys and girls.
It's cold here, and maybe you're thinking about getting out of town and heading south.
Yeah, let's go down to the Gulf Coast.
Oh, boy. It's great in January, right? Well, we want to introduce you to a friend of ours. He's popped in on the show from time to time. It's usually when hurricanes are headed toward the Gulf Coast. He now heads up a new venture called Panhandle Weather. It's a 24/7 weather service.
And you need to download the app. It's really cool.
And he is Chief Meteorologist Chris Smith. How are you, Chris?
Wonderful. It's good to hear y'all's voices.
Well, thank you.
Everything is hunky-dory down here at the beach, at least for now.
For now,
Well, Chris, I saw the pictures, the two pictures that you put up a little earlier today. One of them had you in a kind of a beachy mode, and the other one had you dressed up for the Arctic Mageddon. And apparently, did you really say that it's going to be like in the 70s on Sunday on the Gulf Coast and then maybe in the 20s on Monday?
We will be in the 70s tomorrow and then on Monday, we will top out in the 40s, but we'll probably start off around freezing. And we'll drop into the 20s by Tuesday morning, even down to the beach.
Wow.
So, like, it gets cold inland, but we don't freeze very often at the beach, and we will definitely have a freeze at the beach.
Just the other day was the one-year anniversary of the full-blown actual snowstorm in the Panhandle. The pictures were just amazing a year after the fact, but last year it was like everybody's going, what's going on? Kids who were actually playing in the snow wearing gardening gloves because they didn't have gloves.
I tell you what, it is the most fun I've ever had in my career. Now, I technically grew up downwind of Lake Erie, mm-hmm. so even when we moved at 12, I had seen a lifetime's worth of snow
right.
in that time. But like to see everyone's faces, to see like a legit snow, like we had like 3.5 inches of snow at my house. And it was absolutely amazing. Here's the other crazy thing. Last Sunday, we had snow here at the beach as well. It wasn't nearly as much, but mm-hmm. we definitely saw snowflakes coming from the sky here at the beach.
You saw the people standing out on the beach with their tongues out, like trying to catch the snow on their tongue because it wasn't sticking to the ground.
And we've been seeing reports of this crazy weather front that is heading from roughly Louisiana and Texas all across the southern and eastern states, and it's going to be some serious cold weather for people who are not used to it.
Yes, it is like already getting close. It's into Pennsylvania and the Mid-Atlantic, stretches through Chicago and St. Louis and Kansas City, goes all the way into Arizona right now that's seeing impacts from this. And then we will see severe weather tomorrow afternoon here in the Panhandle. So like the possibility of tornadoes tomorrow.
Yeah.
A significant storm system. And, you know, I mean, the snow, a lot of those folks that are getting snow, they might not enjoy it, but they can deal with it. But like the ice is the big issue, mm-hmm. like in parts of Mississippi and Tennessee, and those are some real problem areas that we're going to have to watch.
So for our listeners who might be seriously thinking of hopping in the car, just getting out of town because we've got these sub-zero temperatures and you're going to head south, it's probably not the best idea for the next few days.
And as we said earlier, we were supposed to be down there in February, and we have put off our 3-week trip to the Gulf Coast for a month. We're not going to be down there till March because February looks like it's just going to be too crazy. What are you hearing?
Yeah, at least through the first week and change, we're going to be way below average. Like the next week, we will see, like at my house, we have maybe touched freezing once. We'll probably have at least 4 nights this week below freezing. Mm-hmm. And we'll be in the high temperatures, will be like through this whole week into next weekend, we'll barely get above 50 degrees.
Ouch. That we said it.
Yeah.
And I seriously mean it. 50 degrees in Chicago is different than 50 degrees on the Gulf Coast. It's just colder when it's coming off the Gulf.
It's not going to be a fun week at all.
No.
Folks are going to start getting angry, I think.
Well, the upside of it is you are doing this 24/7. So it's not like you are, I heard you say once, well, I'm no longer am I nestled between a sports cast and a kicker story.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here to give you the weather 24/7. You and meteorologist Dan Nyman, right?
Yes. Yeah. He was at the TV station with me. And yeah, we just kind of decided that in this day and time, most people watch, I mean, like everyone would watch WGN for Tom Skilling,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so like what we're doing is we're just saying like, ignore news, because so much of news is divisive. Like we're just going to take weather and we're going to play in this political free sandbox over here. And we'll talk about the one thing that people like, which is the weather. You know, it affects every single person.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're just focusing on the weather here in the Panhandle. And it is a lot of fun. And like my studio is in my, I'm in my garage right now. And I will send you some pictures so you can see what it looks like. But like, it's a real operation. It just happens to be 20 feet from my bedroom.
Well, if you don't mind, we'll post some of those pictures on our blog. And the blatant plug light is just going on. So if people would like to download the Panhandle Weather app, which they should, and I say this not just because we're talking to you, but oh boy, it's impressive. You're doing some really cool stuff. So how do people get the Panhandle Weather app?
Well, it's absolutely free in the iTunes App Store, the Google Play Store, where we have an app on Roku. You can watch us on YouTube. We have lots of cameras across the coast. So if you're in Chicago and it's cold and you're missing the beach and those Gulf Coast sunsets, you can just tune in and watch those.
This is a dream for you. This is something that I imagine a venture that you have wanted to have for some time, because you just didn't decide one day, well, heck, we're just going to start doing this 24/7. This was a big leap that you took. How has it grown? How long have you been doing this, and how has it grown? What kind of following do you have at this point?
So this is like the crazy thing. And I mean, y'all have been doing radio for a while, but media is changing like lightning fast. And, you know, so much of this is like, it used to be like you had to have a TV station or a newspaper or a radio station to broadcast. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, like with YouTube and podcasting, like anyone can broadcast. It's a matter of like, are you turning out content that people want to take in? Mm-hmm. But for us, we've been up on air for 3.5 months. I think we've crossed 15,000 app downloads. We're over, between our several Facebook pages, like over 80,000 followers there. And like, honestly, people are just like happy, because like this whole thing came about because, like, I mean, you know, working in media, look at your hours that you're working right now.
Yeah.
It's not a family friendly business. And I just reached the point myself that, like, I wanted to be a better dad. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be more present, like, go to my kids' sporting events. Mm-hmm. You know, my wife was essentially like a single mom because I was always at work. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, well, what if we're able to do this at home? And so we started our own weather channel, and people have reacted very well. We now, like, last weekend, we had more people watching us than the TV station. Mm-hmm. 3.5 months.
And the TV station took note of that, too. They were not real happy about that.
No,
I'm guessing.
No, definitely not. But just imagine getting underneath someone's skin in 3.5 months.
It's only going to get better.
So, you know, it's just media, but we're having a lot of fun, and I think people see that, and my family's happy, I'm happy, and we're not even making a profit yet. But, like, mm-hmm. I don't worry about that, because I know that's all going to come.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, Chris says that he is working out of his garage. When you tune into Panhandle Weather, you're not going to see what looks like, oh, here's a guy hanging out in his garage. No, you are going to see a set and graphics and, more importantly, information that is as good as you would get on any major network broadcast. And Chris certainly knows that drill, because he has been with CNN for a while. I mean, if you didn't know, because we're telling you, you wouldn't know this is coming out of Chris's garage. It's a wonderful professional broadcast.
So congratulations. I mean, that was a huge leap you took,
well, thank
and it's
you.
Working.
I really appreciate it. And, like, we have a green screen, and we have a 86-inch touch screen, and I have the same weather graphics that one of the stations in town has. Like, we're invested.
Mm-hmm. Really, really. So if you're planning on traveling, and maybe you get away in the winter months and you head to the south, Panhandle Weather, you need to check it out. You need to put that app on your phone. Or if you're just a weather geek, if you just like finding out what's going on in the world, you can find that too, because these guys are doing it 24/7.
And let me ask you to expand on the definition. Panhandle Weather covers how much territory?
Generally speaking, we're Tallahassee to Pensacola, but I mean, obviously, we're talking about other parts of the country. And right now, in our group, there's like kind of a group, an affiliate. It's like really a text group or a support group of people like me that maybe were like weather people in their television markets that decided to do this. And right now, there's about 16 of them, many of whom are being impacted by this big winter storm. And so, like, you could go to the nationalweathernetwork.com and see where all these people are, and then just watch anyone's individual streams of people like me, but they happen to be in Tulsa or Little Rock or Joplin, Missouri. that are being like really hammered right now with this. And it's just fascinating to watch them cover the event.
I have to ask you a little bit away from the weather, but also related. Johnny and I were just talking about how cold it is, and that on our block where we live in Panama City Beach, the house that we have there was built in the
61
early 60s. Many of the houses on our block that were built in the late 50s, early 60s, don't have furnaces. Is that the case where you are now?
Where I am now, thankfully, we're in a newer home, so we are all good, and we'll be plenty warm. But I tell you what, if you need me to run by the house and rip the pipe tomorrow night, or I guess it would be Monday night, I'll be more than happy to do so.
Well, what happened when I literally think it was the first thing we did when we inherited the house. We said, you know what, we're taking that wall space heater out and we're getting us a big old furnace.
Yep.
So when we're there, we have friends come over so they can sit in our living room and get all toasty and then go back to their house. I know it's crazy. People say, you've got to be kidding, but it's real.
Where y'all live is, I think, the hidden gem of the area.
Shh.
And it's just an amazing part of that, because I think when people think of Panama City Beach, they think of like condos and high rises and spring break and stuff like that. But like where y'all are is like single family.
Yeah.
And
yep.
Very quiet.
It's a neighborhood. Yeah.
Yes, it's a short walk from the beach.
That's right.
Yep.
Absolutely. But people, you didn't hear that. You don't want to move to
you don't know anything about this.
We've got enough traffic already. Well, again, things are going to get interesting next week. If you're planning on heading south, you better plan ahead and watch the weather. It might be worth laying back for a while, because this storm is affecting something like 200 million people in this country.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean everybody's getting ice and everybody's getting snow. Right now, we're getting snow. Chris, you get a kick out of this. We're on the 18th floor downtown Chicago, and we're looking out, and there's nothing. We can't see Navy Pier or the big buildings.
Because of the snow that's coming down.
So it's going to be interesting.
Oh, my kids are jealous.
Oh, yeah. We know that story. We had a 9-year-old with us back Christmas week. I never saw a happier child. Everything under the tree paled next to snow that fell. And when he got to go and lay in the yard and roll around in the snow, I thought, why did we even buy presents? It wasn't necessary. Well, Chris, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Hopefully we can catch up with you when we're down there in March and maybe come over and see that garage setup that you've got.
I would absolutely love it.
Well, thanks a bunch for joining us tonight. Stay warm, stay safe, and we will stay in touch with you. Thank you, Chris Smith.
Thanks, Chris.
Y'all have a great weekend.
Bye-bye.
You too. And you can, again, you can download Panhandle Weather. You can download the app. Or if you want to get a sense of what it's all about, just on your computer, go to panhandleweather.com. Real simple, panhandleweather.com. We have a bunch of things coming up tonight. If you've been around Chicago for a long time, you may have heard of the City News Bureau. And City News Bureau was a fixture for broadcasting in this city. And newspapers. And newspapers. Years ago, for many, many years, for over 100 years, newspapers in Chicago, radio stations in Chicago, television stations in Chicago, any entity that was disseminating news, along with having access to the national wires, United Press International and Associated Press, if you were in Chicago, you had access to the City News Bureau.
Now, if you were reading your newspaper or listening to this radio station, you might not know that this story came from City News Bureau, but there were a bunch of hard-working people, and there's some great stories in a brand-new book entitled Sirens in the Loop, A History of the City News Bureau of Chicago. And one of the authors is with us on the phone right now, and we want to welcome in Jim Elsner. How are you tonight, Jim?
Hey, Jim.
I'm doing fine, Stephen. Johnny, thanks for having me.
Hey, congratulations on the book.
Thank you so much. It's not just me. It's my co-author, Paul Zimbrakis, who was our editor for 43 years at City News Bureau and a good friend and a mentor. Unfortunately, he passed away before he was able to see this finish. But it was a co-effort, and I'm so glad that we were able to get it done.
Yes.
I'll be very candid with you. Neither of us have finished the group, the book, rather, because this is the kind of book that we're savoring. This is a fascinating book, and I think even people who aren't involved with broadcast media as we are.
Or journalism of any kind.
This is a wonderful book. Well done.
You've done a great job of giving us a sense of what our city was like throughout the 20th century, thanks to the City News Bureau. Now, we talk about Paul, the co-author of the book. Writing this book was his passion, right, Jim?
Yes, and he and I talked about it several times before he passed away. He died in May of 2022, so going on 4 years here. And I have to admit, I was a little bit slow on the pickup. You know, I was doing other things, and I didn't really want to get into it. And then after he passed away, I asked his family if I could take his archives, which I had already looked through a couple times. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of sat in the corner of my office. I put things off for a while, like all of us tend to do. And finally, I decided, I got to get in there. And once I did, I was just fascinated by the stories that... The breadth of the stories, they make you laugh, they make you cry. It's all of the above. And first and foremost, Johnny, you just mentioned it, this is a story of Chicago history.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me take you back to your beginning with City News Bureau. How did you come to City News Bureau?
Well, I graduated from college. I had been in the military, so I was a little bit older than most of the people at City News Bureau. So I was like 27 years old, I think, at the time. You know, probably the average age of the person who came there was 22, 23. And my brother was an assistant state's attorney in Chicago. He knew I wanted to go into journalism, and he was the one who said, you know, I get these calls all the time from these reporters from the City News Bureau. He didn't know all that much about it other than he had been quoted in a few cases that he had. So I just went over and knocked on the door, which is what you did in those days. You know, there was no internet. You couldn't send things out. Well, you could certainly send letters out, but this is the way it was done at City News Bureau. So, and I mentioned in the first part of the book that the first person who greeted me was the legendary switchboard operator. His name was Gladys Warity, but everybody called her Ruby Ryan. And that's a long story. You have to read the book to see how you end up with that nickname. You know, and she was quite a character, and I told her what I was there for, and she called to Paul Zimbrakis, who was at the city desk. He came over, kind of looked me over for a minute, said, just a minute, wait here, and then eventually he took me in to meet the general manager, Larry Millay, and Larry hired me. You know, in 10 minutes, I had met what I consider to be three legendary people mm-hmm. in the history in Chicago journalism. Larry Millay, Paul Zimbrakis, and Ruby Ryan. And I have profiles of each of them in the book.
Wonderful profiles of them. And for people who hear Ruby's name and they go, well, that sounds familiar. Yeah, Amos and Andy. So you'll read all about it in the book, right?
But, exactly. I was there from 1970 to late 1972, and then I went to the Tribune. And you were encouraged to move on. That was
right.
The business model. It was like, you know, earn your spurs here. You know, they called it a boot camp, but it was also a professional news gathering agency. We learned so much from there. And, you know, in the book, I showed so many of the memories that people had collected mm-hmm. and talked about that just relate to that.
Well, the funny thing is I could relate starting out in small town radio station, because that's what we used to do. It was our training ground, and you got paid peanuts, but they would say, yeah, but kid, you're going to go places. Hang in there, you know, do your hours, work your crazy shifts. And that's what you did at City News. And a little over 50 years ago, you were making $120 a week. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what I started at. And actually, Larry liked my military background. So he gave me $10 a week more than the other people. So they were making 110 at the time. So that was 1970.
That's crazy.
But, you know, we all learned to live on that, just as you did, Johnny, at the small radio station. somehow you did it, and you always had a few nickels left over to go to the Billy Goat Tavern.
Right, right.
Of course. What was it about the City News Bureau, about their thought process of, okay, we have to make sure this is right? I mean, the classic is, if your mom tells you she loves you, check it out. How did that get instilled to the City News Bureau thought process of, okay, here's this story, but now let's make sure we get the facts? And
we had good editors, Steve, and they were the veterans who were there in the newsroom. Obviously, Paul was there when I came. There were a couple. There was Wayne Klatt, who helped a lot with this book. He's still alive, lives on the northwest side of Chicago, and his memories, both Paul and Wayne were at the City News Bureau over 40 years.
Wow.
There were these legendary characters that a couple of mine met, but they were before me. Arnold Dornfeld, who left about a year before I came to City News Bureau, and he actually wrote the only other book that I know of that I could find that was really about City News Bureau. It was called Behind the Front Page, and he wrote that in 1984. So from 1984 to 1999, when the City News Bureau closed down, it was only 15 years, but there was a lot of history that occurred in that 15 years. So, and Dorney, as we called him, as he was known by, really focused on the early years of the City News Bureau and some of the new big news stories that the Bureau covered, as well as all the other newspapers and so on, such as the Iroquois Theater fire, the Eastland disaster, and moving on to the crime and prohibition era. So Dorney did a great job of covering those sorts of news stories. I kind of picked it up from that point and moved on.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. We are talking with Jim Elsner, who is the co-author of Sirens in the Loop, A History of City News Bureau of Chicago. And Johnny and I were just talking off the air, and we were recalling how at our first radio stations, Johnny out in Aurora, and when I was out in at WJOB in Hammond and WLTH in Gary, we subscribed to the City News Bureau along with United Press International and Associated Press.
Yeah, yeah. Jim, let's explain to our audience what the title is all about, Sirens in the Loop. It's a great title, Sirens in the Loop, A History of the Chicago City News Bureau of Chicago.
Well, the title was suggested to me by Wayne Klatt, who I just mentioned a moment ago, mm-hmm. who was our assistant city editor. And it was a title that he had wanted to use for one of the books that he wrote, and he never quite got around to getting to use it. He says, "Jim, this is yours if you want to use it." Mm. And what it really refers to is that our offices were always in the loop, or actually the last office was technically outside of the loop on 35 East Wacker. But you could always hear when you were in the news office if there was a siren, you know, a police siren, emergency vehicle, fire truck. And we had a rule, the policy is that we would then immediately send out a bulletin to all of our subscribers. You just mentioned the radio stations, the TV stations, and the newspapers. And it was a policy that we had to say, "Sirens in the Loop. City News Bureau will follow up shortly." But it was an alert to all of our clients that if they wanted to follow up themselves, we didn't know what it was, they had the alert from us. So that was the reason for the title, Sirens in the Loop.
It's perfect. And there were so many moments in the book where people are sharing their experiences having worked for the City News Bureau, where I could see like a movie in my head, you know. First there was Clark Kent, and I said, no, it's not Clark Kent. Then there was the front page. I go, no, not the front page. But really, so much that you depict in the book is movie material. And in fact, I mentioned the front page. The movies and the play were based on reporting by the Bureau, right, Jim?
Well, Charles MacArthur had worked at the Bureau back in the 20s. He eventually married an actress that I think a few people may have heard of, Helen Hayes. Helen Hayes was his wife, the first lady of American theater. And Charles MacArthur and his co-author Ben Heck, who are fairly notable screenwriters out in Hollywood, wrote that play. There have been, I think, three reprisals on Broadway over the years, and several movies.
Mm-hmm.
So just coincidentally, the first time I saw it was in 1969. I didn't know anything about City News Bureau, and the next year there I was working there.
Huh.
It's a funny play. It's a very fast talking. It's kind of that old Chicago journalism perception.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, that's how it originated, Johnny.
That's great.
And there are a lot of names that people would know who came through City News Bureau. Pam Zechman, Mike Royko. Who are some of the others that have become legendary in their own right?
Whenever I have to explain to anyone what City News was about, I always think of, you know, reporters or journalists who have celebrity to them. And so I usually do start with Mike Royko.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mike has been passed away over 20 years ago. So, you know, all these things are in the past. Mike Royko, the author Kurt Vonnegut, worked there right through World War II and has some good stories. The Pulitzer Prize winning reporter, Seymour Hersh, mm-hmm. who broke the My Lai massacre mm-hmm. Story during Vietnam. More current would be David Brooks, who appears on television a lot. He's been with the New York Times and Atlantic Magazine, and I think he worked for the Washington Post for a while. He's probably the most current. But, you know, it's been, again, 1999 was when the City News closed down, so it's been 26, 27 years yeah. now. So people have moved on through, and there's not too many of them left.
And there were some women. We did mention Pam Zechman. Michael Sneed was another one that came through there. And I got to tell you, back in 77, when I had left Columbia College with my journalism degree, I thought, well, I'll just go over there to City News. And I had an instructor at Columbia College said, well, they'll toughen you up because they're rough over there. And that was their reputation, you know, wasn't it?
Yeah. There's a great story in there written by Ann Keegan, who was a wonderful reporter at the mm-hmm. Chicago Tribune. And she worked first at City News Bureau. She preceded me by a couple of years. And in 1968, she had left and went to the Tribune. In 1990, I'm going to shift this focus just for a second. City News Bureau hosted its 100th annual or centennial.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great party. It was at the West in Chicago. Helen Hayes did come to that. George Went from Cheers, who had been a newspaper guy in town down here as a copy boy for the Daily News. There were a lot of celebrities. People from all over the country came. And we published a booklet for everybody, and with great stories in there. And one of the stories was written by Ann Keegan, and it was called The Time the Women Came to Stay. And the basis of the story was that they only hired men until World War I. And then the boys went off to war, and they hired women. And then the boys came back, and the women went home. And then in World War II, the same thing happened, although a few of them were able to maintain, stay involved in journalism. During the Vietnam War, the same thing happened, and as Ann says, that's when she got hired. And this time, the women came to stay. And it's just a terrific story about her early years in journalism and how, you know, the struggles that she had, and Johnny, I'm sure you faced them too in 1975, and, you know, for acceptance. And
mm-hmm.
I used that story, you know, the entire story, because I just thought it was so great. The other famous City News reporter that I would mention was Mike Sneed, who had a column mm-hmm.
sure.
in the Sun-Times up until about a year ago, a 57-year career.
Yeah.
And Mike also shared some stories both in her column as well as in other publications that I was able to utilize in there too. So the women came and they played a great role, particularly in those later years.
So Paul Zimbrakas, your co-author, had bins, Rubbermaid bins, I imagine, of material. And you were able to whittle this down to 23 chapters. Was that the big challenge, making it
yes.
less than an encyclopedia?
Yes, it was. You know, my wife went off with her sisters for a girls' week. And it was at that time I said, I'm going to get all this stuff out of those Rubbermaid containers, just like you said, Johnny.
Uh-huh.
And I started putting piles all around my house. You know, I knew if my wife wasn't there, she wouldn't be tripping over them or anything else of that nature. And that's kind of how I got started at it. And, you know, it began to just take a form of its own, and I really began to see how these things fit. And so I would say that my first shot through it, I came out with at least 20 of the 20 topics that remain as part of the table of contents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they, you know, they range from some really terrific stories about what it's like to be in a newsroom when a big story hits, such as Our Lady of Angels Fire in 1958.
Mm-hmm.
The DC the
plane
American
crash.
Airlines crash mm-hmm. in 1979 on O'Hare DC-10, you know, and the Tylenol murders,
mm-hmm.
and how those three particular stories came together. So what Paul had done when City News closed in 1999, there was about a 6-year reprieve that the Tribune tried to keep it going. They cut the staff from 40 to about 18. And they kept trying to keep it moving along. And Paul sent emails out to all these reporters that he knew throughout the country and asked them for their memories. Those are the heart and soul of this story.
Yep.
Those people sent those back. And every time I thought I was going to have to write something, I would just happen to find a story that somebody else had written, and it was much better than I could write.
Uh-huh.
And it was just, you know, this first person, and it was, they told their stories, their emotions,
yeah.
the fun they had, as well as the, you know, the tragedies that
sure.
they had to cover
sure.
and how they affected them. So those were the heart and soul of this book.
And it works perfectly.
It was an organizational effort, and it was an editing effort.
Facebook has decided to play nice with us for a second,
mm-hmm.
and Johnny was just able to put up the link to Sirens in the Loop. So if you would like to purchase it, it is from Eckhart's Press, Eckhartz Press, and it's a fascinating read. As we said, even if you have nothing to do with the broadcast industry, this is a fascinating history of an integral part of Chicago.
Yes. In fact, one little factoid I found stunning. Jim, you say in the book that in 1900, the city of Chicago was the fifth largest city in the world. That just blew my mind.
I think that was referencing geographically at the time because
yes.
they were just, particularly, they'd merged with a couple other villages on the border, so to speak.
Right,
you know?
Right. But I was thinking we had survived the Chicago fire, and to really come out of that and then just kind of blossom to the point where we had a World's Fair, we had the exposition. It was like the 1900s, this city was a rockin' place to be, right?
Yes, it was. Absolutely, yeah.
Well, you mentioned some of the big stories that City News broke, and the one story that sticks in my mind is the Lady of the Angels Fire. And forgive me, but the reporter that shares his experience as being the reporter on the scene when he first realized that there was smoke coming out of that school on the north side of Chicago, who was that reporter, Jim?
His name was Chuck Remsburg, and I think Chuck has passed away. And he was quite successful both in journalism and in publishing industry afterwards. I had the same feeling, Johnny, when I first read that. I had never seen that before. It made me read a couple more books on the Our Lady of Angels Fire, and his experience, which was primarily through a letter that he wrote to his parents afterwards about the coverage that he was involved in. And of course, every reporter likes to think that they were the first one on the scene, but I think Chuck had a good claim to that, and he was the first on the scene and had to fill in other reporters as they came. But it was just such a horrendous thing for him to watch. And he's, but the interesting thing, I think, with all these stories is how the reporters focused on their job first. You know, mm-hmm. they were going back and forth, running to telephones in those days. They didn't have cell phones, mm-hmm. so they had to go knock on doors. And I had to do that more than once, knock on people's doors, say, hey, can I use your telephone, you know, if you couldn't find a payphone someplace nearby. But I thought that was a fascinating story.
It really is.
Jim, what was in the years that you were with City News Bureau, what was the hardest story for you to cover? And I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. We just passed the anniversary of the fire of the first McCormick place. At that time, I was at WJOB in Hammond, and we heard the news about what was going on. We came down, and I was literally standing there with some of the reporters, and we were with the firemen. And if you went 5 feet in one direction, the flames, the heat from the flames was incredible. If you went 5 feet in the other direction, the cold, the ice, I mean, the fire hydrants were freezing. So along that line, was there any story or stories that were just particularly hard to cover?
Well, there was one story that sticks in my mind that I don't want to say it was so hard to cover, but it was, again, one of those stories that you had to be on top of because, you know, we were all young, energetic, but inexperienced reporters competing with reporters, experienced reporters from the Tribune, the Daily News, and the radio and TV stations. And I covered criminal courts building for about 3 months, and which I thought was a fascinating experience. There was a gangland shooting of a Chicago police detective by the name of James Alfano. And it was these legendary, I hate to keep using that word, but legendary characters from some of the street gang, like Jeff Fort was the name, mm-hmm. one that sticks out, who were accused of this murder. Now, they got off. It was a poorly prosecuted case at the time, unfortunately. But there were things breaking each day in that story that you just had to stay on top of and hope you didn't get scooped. Mm-hmm. And that was probably the hardest one. It wasn't until I went to the Tribune that I ever had to cover a fire at nighttime. and I know exactly what you're talking about, Steve. You know, the fire helmets with the icicles hanging yep. off them and all the rest of yep. rest of those sorts of things, you know. But it was that court case that always scared me each day, like, what have I missed? Mm-hmm. What's the Tribune going to have that I don't have? You know, so that was one that sticks in my mind.
Can I ask you to just for a moment, and this is beautifully laid out and explained in the book, but I want to tease people with what the world was like for reporters who were pounding the pavement, trying to get the scoop, trying to get the story, not really getting a lot of respect from the reporters in the big newspapers, for example. I suspect you're kind of treated like the bastard children out there trying to get the scoop.
Well, you know, fortunately, there were a lot of City News people who had gone on to the papers, and
right.
so they were relatively kind to us, you know. and there were some old guys like Walter Spurko, who had covered the St. Valentine's Day Massacre,
yes.
was still at the police headquarters when I showed up there, and I remember him being Dane kind and helping me out. He'd seen hundreds of City News people come. Mm-hmm. Before him. And there was a fellow by the name of Joe Morang who worked for the Tribune. These guys were characters, and it was an age and a morality that probably doesn't exist anymore. You know, the newspapers came along and created codes and policies and so on and so forth, but these guys were wonderful reporters, and for the most part, I think we were all treated pretty well by them.
I have to ask, you talk about the characters. One of my other favorite books about newspapers and reporting in Chicago is a book called Deadlines and Monkey Shines. And it's all about the competition between the newspapers in Chicago in the early days and how this is back in the days when some of them had late editions and sometimes they would put a false headline on one of their late editions to cause some of the competition to spin their wheels and go chasing a story that wasn't there. I'm assuming that kind of thing never happened with City News Bureau?
Well, I don't recall, you know, that type of story exactly, but we've all read the, and I remember that book, Steve. Did read it number of years ago. Those are great stories. You know, during that period of time, there were things, you've always heard the stories about stealing the photograph off of the widow's, you know, mantle to go into the newspaper. And there's a story about Larry Millay, who was, as I mentioned, the general manager at City News Bureau, who supposedly was told to cover a fire and he couldn't get into the property, and so he created a separate fire off to the side, and then the firemen came and they put that out to allow him to get in and cover the story. Things like that didn't happen by the time I came along, but the stories linger, and they're fun to read, and particularly in Dornfeld's book about, you know, behind the front page, as he called it, there were several of those stories.
I want to talk about technology, though, because it changed the world of media. And I want to go pre-1982, because wasn't it in 82 when the teletype machine was starting to be used?
When I got to the City News Bureau, we were using the teletype machine. And I think in the book I said it was like 1960 or 1961. Before that, at City News Bureau, they used pneumatic tubes, and those were 14 miles of tubes that ran underneath the city of Chicago, you know, down there in the tunnels, the great tunnels that flooded many years ago and so on. And they would have a tube for each newspaper and each radio station, TV station, so on and so forth, and they would have to, you know, take the copy, the hard copy, and actually put it into those tubes and push a button, and, you know, they'd make a big whooshing sound, and, you know, 30 seconds later or a minute later, it would show up in the newsroom or wherever, you know, it was going to. Then the teletype came along, and that was my era. And then when City News moved in 1982, I think it was, over onto Wacker Drive, by that time the computers were taking over, and that's how they transmitted the news after that. You know, back in the old days when they first started in 1890, of course, they had just messengers on the street who would walk or run or to deliver the news.
Do you know if those boys that were working the street, were they paid by the story that they were running? For example, you know, I imagine an editor shoves something to Steve and says, get this over to the Sun-Times. And so he runs down the street, and then he comes back and he gets a few coins for doing that.
Yeah. Probably you're right, I would imagine. Because City News was also very famous for its budgetary prowess. Nobody ever got overpaid. You know, there was an old story about they were only allowed to take a bus or a cab if it was like the house was on fire and they had to get there. Other than that, they were supposed to walk.
Wow. In fact, wasn't it Our Lady of the Angels Fire that the reporter was sent in a cab?
And yes, he was. And it was the first time he'd ever gotten that treatment.
Yeah, and he knew this was a big deal. This was going to be a big story. There's so many stories like that I... You know, living in Chicago, Steve and I both, I said, do you remember this one? Yeah, I remember that one. Or maybe we were already in the business at that point.
But, well, we were both on the air over at WIND when the Tylenol story broke.
When the Tylenol story broke. And I remember having Alderman Bernie Stone on my show. And I had just been to the Jewel grocery store and watched somebody open up a carton of cottage cheese and stick their nose in it. And I had him on the show and I said, we got to do something about this because of the Tylenol scare, because we were all terrified.
Sure.
And that was a story that didn't City News break that story, Jim?
Yes, City News always takes credit for that. And the story that I ran in the book really shows how just hard reporting kind of broke that story, because it came out little by little.
Yeah.
You know, with the one reporter, we were always required to check with the coroner's office, later called the medical examiner's office, throughout a reporter's shift to see what deaths there were. And one of the reporters began to put it together and say, gee, there's three deaths that occurred out in Elk Grove Village. They seem to be connected in some way. They're all close to each other. And it was just, you know, the editors and the reporters at City News Bureau just did the right things on that story, mm-hmm. and it's very well described in there.
So it's a case of not only good reporting, but good detective work on the part of the City News Bureau.
Yes, without a doubt. But it's covering the basics of good journalism and good reporting, and that's how it happened. And that's what you're taught at City News Bureau.
Mm-hmm. Wow, there's so much to talk about. When you read the book, again, you could say it's a handbook for journalists or for historians or people who are interested in Chicago history. It's just fascinating.
I'm going to sound like I'm haranguing, but it should be a handbook for people getting into broadcasting right now.
Yes. Boy, you will be so thankful with what you deal with today compared to what was being dealt with in the 20s, 30s, you know, all the way up until the end of the City News Bureau. And it lasted for over 100 years, which is pretty darn impressive.
Pretty good. Yeah. Without a doubt. It's 108 years. Actually, they were in their 109th year. It was without a doubt a success story.
Well, tonight on our text line, we've heard from various people who had something to do with newspapers in Chicago, a copy boy for the Tribune, a couple of people that worked in the print shop for the Tribune, all these Tribune people coming out of the woodwork, a listener whose uncle worked for the City News Bureau. A listener said, well, what about the female reporters at City News? And in fact, going back to the very beginning, wasn't a woman instrumental in City News Bureau actually starting?
Well, the first female hire was in 1894, so 4 years after the bureau started. But I don't think they were probably played too much of a large role at that time,
yeah.
Without a doubt. But yeah.
But she deserves that.
There's a history, though.
Yeah, she deserves that footnote in history. Because, again, imagine what the world was like in the late 1800s. And she says, I imagine her with a little pencil behind her ear, and she's going to go to work as a reporter.
There you go.
Was there anything that you learned in going through all of these notes that you put together for the book? Was there anything you learned that you didn't know?
Oh, without a doubt. Probably the one that jumped out at me most was the last two chapters, almost the last two chapters. It was about the closing of City News Bureau. And even though I knew Paul well and we would socialize and get together, I couldn't remember him ever telling me about all the efforts that he made to try to keep City News going. Even Wayne Clatt, who worked across the desk from Paul for all those years, told me afterwards when he read the first draft of the book that he learned new things there that Paul had done. There was a similar organization out in Los Angeles called the City News Service, I think it was called. And one of the owners actually had worked at City News Bureau of Chicago back in the 1960s. And they came out here and took a good look, kicked the tires, so to speak, even brought Paul out to Los Angeles to meet with them to see if that would work. It just never, the numbers didn't work, and so they eventually passed on it.
Mm-hmm.
Paul particularly went to the McCormick, or the MacArthur Foundation, the MacArthur Foundation to see if he could get funding from them. Of course, that was John D. MacArthur, and his brother was Charles MacArthur. Paul was hoping that they would be able to fund the News Bureau for 2 or 3 years until they could get up and running and so on. They got a lot of pushback when they tried to raise the rates to the radio stations, TV stations in particular, and it was just the economics didn't work. But Paul never gave up on it, and tried very hard to keep the bureau going in the way he knew it.
Well, God bless him for keeping all of those notes and those Rubbermaid containers, and thank you for taking on the task of that. I would imagine initially it was kind of overwhelming, but once you got into it, you like a dog with a bone, you went for it.
I really enjoyed it. Now, it's about a 75,000 word book, and at about 30,000 was the first time that I began to say, oh, I think I can get this done.
That's awesome.
I was working at it about 3 hours a day, 2 to 3 hours a day, 4 or 5 days a week. But there was so much fun stuff, so many great stories that I kept coming across. And unfortunately, I couldn't use them all in there. I tried to work them through so that they were in the narrative of the book. But there was about 15 stories that I put into one chapter just called Memories, because they were too good to be lost to history. They're just great reading. So I combined all those into that one chapter.
Well, Jim, congratulations on a job well done. And as I said at the outset, for anyone who wants to buy this book or is thinking about buying this book, please do. We are savoring it, and it is a book that you will see. You want to put it down because you want to enjoy what you've just read, and you don't want it to end. This is a terrific book. Thank you for writing
it,
Jim.
And do us a favor, Jim. If you're going to be doing any book signings, let us know so we can tell our audience about it too, because I think there is definitely an audience for your book. And again, as Steve said, congratulations, and thanks for joining us tonight.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it and enjoyed the discussion.
Thanks a bunch. Take care.
Thank you, Jim. And again, if you want to get the book, it is Sirens in the Loop, A History of the City News Bureau of Chicago. It's available through Eckhart's Press, Eckhartz Press.com. And Facebook is still being nice, and apparently the link that Johnny just put up on Facebook is working, and we will have links on all of our other social media sites. We're going to segue, and we're going to talk a little bit about the Oscar nomination. Ron Brown is nice enough to join us, and we're going to talk a little bit about the Oscar nominees. But
we haven't seen them all, but we really love this one. The movie made history on Thursday when it was nominated for more Oscars than any movie ever.
16.
And the movie is Sinners.
We watched it last week. We were out at my brother's in Munster. We hadn't seen it, and we'd been kind of holding off because Lee loves to watch movies with us, and we would love to watch movies with him. Wow, I knew it was going to be good. I was blown away. That is absolutely, and I know we haven't seen all the other movies. We're going to watch as many as we can, but that's the best movie of the year, and it deserves everything.
You know, I'm surprised. I'm actually surprised. I do agree that it's a very good movie. And, I mean, there were cinematic moments that just took me by surprise.
Yes.
You know, out on the dance floor when they were doing the music, when they were talking about the past and the future. I was like blown away. However, it is a bloody vampire movie. So I just didn't know.
You just gave it away.
Oh, it's in, the trailers give it away.
I know.
And there's enough been out on it already.
But it's more than that. It is a vampire movie, but it's also a very emotional family-ish movie, too.
Oh, it's about a lot of different things.
Yeah. I mean,
it's about racism and prejudice. It's about community. It's about music and how that brings communities together and passes along information down generations. I agree. It's a very good movie, but for people that don't like to see, you know, blood spattered, you know, 10 feet at a time.
Well,
it's a little hard to do. It might be a little hard to take.
Also, for people who don't care for that, and warning, anyone like my brother, there is a scene that has a snake, and Lee had to close his eyes, and we told him when that scene was over with.
Oh, yeah.
But absolutely, and I'm not giving anything away, stay past the ending credits.
Yes. Well,
the first credit that you think is the ending credit, because then it goes on, and it's the best payoff. I think that's what really left me feeling good, was that great payoff with Buddy Guy.
That adds depth to the movie.
Yeah. And technically, Ron, the whole idea that it was done in IMAX and in Panavision, and I read Ryan Coogler, the director, said, and we're going to go back and watch it, because he said he intentionally did that so when it's going to become emotional, he squeezes
it becomes full screen for emotion, and then it's kind of letterboxed when you're seeing just a whole lot of stuff going on.
He's a good director. And he wrote this as well. And it's all original.
And is he smart? In 25 years, he will own the movie? every bit of it. He had that put in his contract. In 25 years, it's his.
Yeah, that's a pretty smart guy right
that
there.
That is. That made me think of Jack Nicholson when he was in Batman. And he said, yeah.
He took a very comparatively low mm-hmm. salary, but he got...
box office.
What was the... what's the term? I'm blanking out on the term. When you get
a percentage of
your character's the rights to your character's
he's dumb like a fox, right?
I can't think of that. People are shouting the word at their
that's why they have a text line. They can do that. So there were 16 nominations for that, breaking the 14 nomination mark, which, as I recall, was La La Land, Titanic, and All About Eve. Yes. Those were the three that in history had ranked 14.
Well, here's the thing, too. I mean, those are nominations. They're not victories. They haven't won anything as of yet. There have been movies that have had double-digit nominations and walked away or went home with zero Oscars.
Right.
So it does happen. But it does show that Sinners got a lot of love and well-deserved.
But let me stay with Sinners, but segue to the nominations for actor. I'm so glad to see Michael B. Jordan because he plays both brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a difference in the brothers, and the way he pulls it off is flawless.
Yeah, and it's pretty good CGI, too. I mean, you can't really tell that
there's... Yeah, you cannot tell.
Like in the old days, you know.
When you went,
let's see what they're doing there.
Right.
Not really quite working, but... so they do pull that off.
Well, do you think he's up against Leonardo DiCaprio and Timothée Chalamet? Do you think in that group, and there's some really good performances in that group, do you think he would have a chance?
Yeah, I think he certainly would.
Yeah.
I think that Timothée Chalamet is probably the front runner in that, though.
Do you think that's because he was overlooked the last time?
No, it was a great performance, and it's in a great movie, Marty Supreme.
Yeah, that's right. You really like that.
Yeah, did you see that?
No, because
we haven't. It's on our list.
The title of it left me cold. I was like, it doesn't tell me anything.
Yeah, it sure doesn't. But it is a great movie. It moves very quickly. It may win for Timothée Chalamet, but it's nice to see Michael B. Jordan represented there. That category is always just stacked with talent. In addition to Leonardo DiCaprio, and to be honest with you, I think he's just there because he's Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yes.
I didn't think his performance was anything that was all that great in One Battle After Another. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't. He's Leonardo DiCaprio. He's going to get nominated no matter what movie he's in. Ethan Hawke, however, in Blue Moon, that was absolutely a fantastic performance from Ethan Hawke, and I was like, where did that come from? He's playing a character. You know, in earlier movies, he's just like Ethan Hawke.
Yes,
but
good
he's
point.
Been very good for very long time, and I think there's an outside chance that the Academy says this is his time right now because it's that standout of a performance.
How did Sean Penn get in that mix? What did I miss that he was in?
He was in One Battle After Another. He played the Colonel Lockjaw.
Okay.
The bad guy with the bad haircut. And he was very good, very funny, and he could win. You know, I'm kind of picking Delroy Lindo for Sinners, though, for that, because of the same reason, is that the Academy likes to reward people who've been around for a long time and who have been excellent for a long time but still don't have an Oscar.
I was so happy to see him in that movie because I've always liked his work.
Well, he's just like the coolest guy
he really is.
You know, so.
And that character was pretty darn cool, too.
Yeah, it was.
I was surprised, moving to actresses, I was surprised to see that Kate Hudson was the only one who got nominated for a Song Sung Blue.
I wasn't. I mean, she was a standout in that. I mean, it was a good movie. I enjoyed it a lot. It was very entertaining. But her singing and her dramatic acting, I mean, she's known for the rom-coms, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And she's very good at that. Yeah. I wouldn't take anything away from her. I mean, she turns around, she smiles at you, and you melt. You just it's just like, and not every beautiful actress can do that. She just has just a wonderful inviting smile. And she uses it in Song Sung Blue, but she has some tragedy as well. So, and she showed that. She was very, very good. It's a shame that she's up against Jesse Buckley in Hamnet.
That's where Jesse has your money on her, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's just so good. I mean, even watching it. I'm not prone to crying at movies, but I did during Hamnet. It was such a wonderful emotional experience, and she has just been very, very good for a very long time as well. I would be shocked if she does not win for Hamnet. It's that kind of performance.
And you're echoing everything that my brother said in his blog about that movie. He loved her. That we can't wait. He's seen it, but we want to see it with him, too. So,
yeah.
Ron, were you as surprised as we were and a whole lot of people were that Wicked got shut out?
Yeah, I was, because it's a big production. It's a fan favorite, and it really is, if nothing else, under the costume, you know, designs and set designs, it's quite impressive. So I don't know why there was a backlash, because they did well last year at the Oscars. Yeah. So I can't explain it.
Okay, for folks who are housebound this weekend, by choice, because who wants to go out in this weather, she said, thinking, I'm going to stay here tonight.
we may not leave.
So you would recommend Hamnet?
Well, I don't know that that's streaming
yet. You're right,
yet.
It's not streaming yet.
But so you know what is Train Dreams. Have you seen that yet?
No.
Oh, it's such a beautiful movie. What a nice surprise. It's a Netflix movie produced by Netflix. It did have a very brief unheralded run at the theaters. I'd never heard it before it went to Netflix, and I was just looking around for something I hadn't seen before, which sometimes is kind of hard for me because I watch a lot of movies. And I said, oh, watch this. In the first 10 minutes, I knew this was a high quality movie.
What's the concept?
It is about a man's life, basically, and the fact that he lives a solitary life. It's the joy of a relationship. He falls in love with the woman, has a child, and you could not be happier for him. He's in Hamnet. This is Joel Edgerton.
Right, and Felicity Jones is in this, right?
And you think, oh, if I could ever be that happy for a week in my life, it would be wonderful. And then there's tragedy. And
of course. Oh,
my gosh, you want to crawl. He does curl up and cry. And it just takes you through all these different emotions. It hits them all. Great cinematography. It's also it's nominated for Best Picture and also Best Cinematography. I would love to see it win Best Cinematography. It won't win for Best Picture.
Is it set in the Pacific Northwest?
In the Pacific Northwest, kind of like the turn of last century. And it is just, it's gorgeous. And it pulls you in. It's funny. It hits all the right chords. I'm telling you, it's a wonderful movie, and it's on Netflix right now.
Okay, so folks, if you're looking for something, look for Train Dreams. Again, I sound so simplistic because I love movies, but I'm thinking, you know what? That escaped me because the title didn't do anything for me.
It doesn't really mean anything. It's not really explained in the movie either.
Really?
I mean, he works on some railroads as far as building the bridge as a logger and things like that. And he has some nightmares about what happens during his experience there. So it's alluding to something, but it really isn't that important. I mean, I don't know what else you would call it, though, because it's not about one thing. There's a collection of stories, maybe about 12 stories in there. And each chapter is interesting, and each chapter has a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Oh, I think I'd love this.
Oh, you definitely. Definitely you will.
I just looked up the director, Clint Bentley.
Yes.
And he was responsible for Sing Sing.
Sing Sing, which is another great movie.
Yeah.
Another great movie.
And he did a couple of things like Nine Races, Jockey. The man's got to work more on his titles.
You know? Yeah.
I'm like, Sing Sing, I was thinking, really? And then it turned out to be a joyous movie. You know?
I thought it was going
to
be a musical. Yeah.
Sing Sing, yeah. Okay, so what else? No, I'm thinking prison, and you're thinking music.
Yeah. I thought it would be a play on prison, a prison musical.
And those are a dime a dozen, you know. What else would you recommend that's out there? Obviously, we would say Sinners would be on our list. Train Dreams.
Right.
The DiCaprio movie. Again, a stupid title. One Battle After Another. That's available.
One Battle After Another. Yeah,
I think that's
on HBO.
Actually on HBO.
Yeah, it's on HBO right now. There's let's see. Well, Blue Moon, I think, is also available right now. And Highest to Lowest is another good movie that I liked a lot. It wasn't nominated, but it's a Spike Lee movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of my favorites of the year. Sorry Baby is another great movie. Not nominated, but that's being streamed right now. Eva Victor was a writer and director and actually the star of that movie. Mm. And that's very funny. It's very smart. And it's also very emotional as well. It's not one thing. So I would highly recommend Sorry Baby.
And for people who don't know what Blue Moon is all about, it has to do with Richard Rodgers, who was with Hammerstein and Hart. And
it's a period piece.
Yeah, it is a period piece. But I'm really curious about that.
The trailer looked good.
Yeah.
It's much like watching a play. Which is kind of funny because it's about musical theater.
Uh-huh.
And well, one of the Lawrence, it's more about Lawrence Hart. And he is been a partner of Rodgers mm-hmm. for his entire career. And now Rodgers meets up with Hammerstein because Lawrence Hart has an alcohol problem and kind of sets him aside. And then they just like recreate Broadway theater after that. So here's Lawrence Hart seeing his career just like dance away from him.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's funny. He's acerbic. He's heartbreaking, and it's all, like I said, Ethan Hawke is just fantastic in it, because you never see him in anything like this.
See, I was on the fence about that one. Now I'm kind of thinking,
I want to see him.
Oh, he's in every scene, and it's about him in a bar talking. And I would just love to sit next to the bar stool and listen to this guy. He's fantastic, because like I said, he can be a real jerk, but he's funny. You know, and he can be very nice, and you can and he can break your heart with the stories, and you see his heart breaking, and it's just sad in a lot of ways, but it's as funny as it is sad, and as witty as anything else. It's really, really good movie. That's Richard Linklater directed it. He's
been around forever.
Yeah, he's been around for a long time, and he and Ethan Hawke have done a lot of things together, but this is the best.
All right, real quick before you have to put your news hat on, mm-hmm. The Secret Agent.
The Secret Agent, you know, I was, it's okay.
And it was nominated for a couple.
It's nominated for Best Picture and as well as Best International Feature. And he, Wagner Moura, was nominated for Best Actor. And it eludes me. I thought it was a good movie. With a secret agent, it's not really about a secret agent at all. Talk about titles. It's more about living under a dictatorship and how they kind of like... go after the people who are dissenters, and he's one of those dissenters, and he's in a group of other people who are dissenters and trying just to live their lives under this political pressure.
Okay, that's not my idea of escapism.
Yeah, that's a little too close to the headlines.
Yeah, it's not, and it's an interesting movie. That's kind of like the best thing that I can say about it, and I kind of liked it, but... I saw another international movie from Germany called The Sound of Falling that just blows it away. It's fantastic. Hmm. It's poetic, and the cinematography. I'm going to have to see it again. It's called The Sound of Falling, and it's just absolutely wonderful.
Out of the nominations, is there anything that you saw when the nominations came out that you said, that's a lock? That's it.
Yeah.
This one has this in this category.
Yeah, Jesse Buckley for Hamlet. Yeah. Even though Rose Byrne, If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You, she was actually very, very good in that. But Jesse Buckley is an absolute lock. If I had to put any money on any one category, that would be it.
Real quick, do you watch the Graham Norton Show?
No, just clips when I see that, like on Facebook.
Thursday nights, you've got to record it on the BBC because
it is so good.
He gets all the big stars.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
And I love the way he interviews them, Ron. You will too, because it's a mix of British stars, so you get to kind of keep up with their pop culture. Mm-hmm. At the same time, he's got anybody who's anything.
But rather than interviewing one person at one time, he has them all sitting on the couch. And so it's like a group conversation, and it goes up and down and sideways. And it's fun.
It seems like they all have their guards down, too.
Yes. I think it's the wine.
It could be.
It helps. All right. You can hear him on Thursdays on Lisa Dent's show when he talks about the movies that are coming up that weekend. That's in the 3 o'clock hour. We're going to let him put his news hat back on. That's Ron Brown.
Okay. Before we get to anything else, I want to go to Tom Appel, the publisher of Consumer Guide, as we talk about all things automotive and... This was a comment on our blog from Linda Sue, mm-hmm. who has been a long-time listener. She has been with us for
decades.
Years, and she's nice enough to stick with us. And she said, please ask Tom Appel about who won the war between Google and Big Sis. Do you sit in the driveway for over 2 minutes warming up the engine, or do you just idle for as long as you buckle up your seatbelt so you don't ruin your transmission belt? As you can tell, my big sis thinks I know nothing. She knows it all. She is the older sister, and I believe most of Google and just idle for 30 seconds and then drive slowly through the village, 25 mile an hour speed limit, until the car engine is warmer. But who does the expert say is right? And before we get your take, Tom, I'll just share that what we've been doing for years is, in whatever weather, we start the vehicle and let it sit there until the engine idles down, and then we pull away.
And it's seconds. It's not a long time.
And my thought was, sometimes it's maybe 30 seconds, but my thought was, doesn't the engine idling down, doesn't that kind of get all of the fluids sort of lubricating things so you're going to be okay as you pull away?
Yeah, and the reason we used to allow a car to idle for a couple of minutes was because we didn't use very good oil. And that was just the nature of the oil that was in cars. It wasn't like we used bad oil. Just the good oil wasn't very good by modern standards. Almost every car now uses synthetic oil, which is very light. And it never actually dries up off the parts of your car. So the pistons, the rings, all the parts of the car that should stay oily do stay oily regardless of the temperature. So we don't have that really rough start that we used to. Most of an engine's wear used to come from starting. That's not the case anymore. In the extreme cold, obviously, things contract and it's a little bit rougher. So if you give it a moment, and it doesn't have to be a full minute, but just give it a moment to start up, you're going to be fine.
But is there something to when you hear the engine idle down, then things are kind of good?
Yeah, that's a great point to do that, and that happens very quickly.
Now, before we move away from this, what's the difference with electric vehicles? Just start and go or what?
Yeah, there's really nothing there to worry about because there's really nothing that – there's no interference parts, there's no oil, there's no lubrication, nothing like that. So you can just move right away. What you're not going to get in an electric vehicle when you start it up is very good information about the state of battery charge. And that'll take a moment for the battery to warm up and for things to make sense. But that doesn't interfere with driving.
So that's how it says in the manual. It'll take a moment for things to make sense.
And you'll know it makes sense when it makes sense.
Yeah.
We can't explain it any better than that. Okay. We had a conversation taking Lakeshore Drive tonight, and it was kind of hairy. I mean, it was 25, 30 miles an hour, quite a bit of traffic, and you had to have that blue goop in your windshield washer. And I said, gee, do we know if we have the fluid that's for below freezing? Because I don't even remember the last time we poured blue goop in there. And came to work, and a listener said, will you ask Tom, is there such a thing as a particular kind of windshield washer fluid you're supposed to use when temperatures are below freezing?
Good question.
Yeah, the answer to that is a brand name that you trust. There are so many suppliers.
Oh, because you don't want cheap stuff with water in it.
Yeah. And if you just run to some gas station and they have a big display outside and you don't recognize the brand, it could be anything.
Well, wait. And if it's sitting outside and it's not frozen, I might grab that.
That's a good point. Although the stuff may freeze, even though it's liquid in the gallon sitting there by the gas station, as you mist it out of the windshield thing, it may freeze up. So, yeah. Or freeze in the lines. You want stuff that you know is going to be good. And it should be good to minus 40 generally.
Okay, so a good name brand should have you covered.
Yeah.
And so I suspect we're okay because we had, I literally held my breath. Steve says, I have to spritz the windows. We can't see. And I'm like, oh no, it's going to freeze up. And it didn't. So we did it a couple more times. But yeah. Gosh, I hate that feeling where you're like, either you run out of it or you're not sure it's right, and all of a sudden you've got ice on your window, and why didn't we stay home? Oh, that's right, because Tom was going to be on
the
show.
That's right.
That's right. It's Tom's night. We had to get to the station.
Okay, so what you driving this week?
Wow, I just got out of a crazy car. I've been dying to drive this for a while, and I finally got into it. And it's one of those things that is both absurd and fabulous. I drove the 2026 GMC Hummer pickup. For people who don't know what that is, General Motors brought back the Hummer name for a line of EVs. There's a pickup truck and an SUV. Both are fully electric, and they are big, bold, expensive, and insanely powerful.
I'm looking at it now.
Define insanely powerful.
I drove the 3X version, and that is currently the most expensive version. There is something called the Graphite Edition coming later in the year.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go with the extra cost battery, which is expensive, and you you order the extra cost battery, you get 1,160 horsepower.
What?
Yeah.
Who needs 1,160 horsepower?
No one needs it, but you do get to say, without lying, that your pickup truck is faster than a Corvette. So there is that.
Oh, did you feel that, though? Because it is a big, clunky-looking vehicle.
It looks clunky. It's actually very refined. It rides well. It's quiet. It's very nice inside. Very much luxury level. The interior should be a little bit nicer because this vehicle comes to $120,000. And I'm not sure the interior...
What?
Yeah, it's very expensive. But it is very refined. They did what they were supposed to do with this vehicle. I'm not entirely sure they're finding an audience for this, but General Motors isn't building a lot of these things, but they're out there. And it does what it's expected to do. It's very so nice, but it is expensive.
And what are we expecting it to do? Pull your house or what?
Well, it will tow. I don't think anyone is actually doing that with this vehicle, but it will tow. It will handle cargo. It's very, very good off-road. Again, I don't know who would do that with this vehicle.
Yeah, not $120,000.
Yeah, it's a bragging rights vehicle mostly, but very effectively good.
Is it possible that it would be a great, like a construction office where you've got the bed and then you've got you've got a very roomy cabin from what I'm looking at?
And you're not going to get stuck.
Yeah.
And from what I'm seeing at some of the pictures, is it just me or are the outside mirrors about 3/4 the size of the vehicle?
They are big. And if you're going to tow, you're going to want those mirrors. I don't know how many people are towing with this.
The more I look at it, it's kind of growing on me in a weird...
No.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, nobody's going to mess with you if you're driving around in that. And you just throw the bodies in the back, right? You just run over them, toss them in the back of the bed. Wow. Did you get any attention when you were driving it?
You know, it is compared to the old Hummer, the first generation Hummers, this vehicle isn't that much of a standout thing. It is large. It is a little bit aggressively styled. The wheels are huge. Here's a fun thing about those wheels. I'm glad you mentioned it. This vehicle has four-wheel steering.
Oh. So,
despite this vehicle size, it is remarkably nimble in parking lots. I'm surprised how easy it is to maneuver.
We love four-wheel steering.
Did you ever try the hands-free driving?
I did not in this vehicle. I didn't have the opportunity. But this is the same system that's in the Cadillac Escalade,
mm-hmm.
the electric Cadillac Escalade IQ. It is very, very good.
Wow.
I'm surprised how long it stays in hands-free mode over time. It almost never required me to pay attention. So I'm impressed.
Dumb question. How does, because someone would try it, on days like this, how does hands-free mode react? Snow, ice, crazy stuff.
If it detects wheel slip, it's not going to engage.
Good.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you wouldn't be able to hands-free through 2 inches or 3 inches of snow. It just wouldn't let that happen.
So you were driving the one that had three motors?
The three motor, that's correct.
Three motors? It must be
one on the front axle, two on the back.
Wow. I'm sorry you didn't drive by and blow the horn so that we can point and laugh. No, I wouldn't until I saw the sticker on it. Oh my gosh, 120,000! You said.
Of course, if you drove by and blew the horn, would our windows have shattered?
Yeah, right.
Now you can do the vehicle for less. You won't get to the 1,160 horsepower, but you still get a lot.
Yeah, but you're under 100,000.
But by the way, I mentioned blowing the horn and the wheels and the windows shattering. I have to ask, how does the horn sound? I ask because we've been surprised at some of the big honking vehicles that have sounding horns.
Oh, we were at a dealership where the guy brought his car in. His sport utility, he said, change this horn.
Yes.
I want a different horn.
He literally did.
And if I'm not mistaken, one man who's very well known in the sports world here in Chicago.
Yes. We won't mention his name.
He was used as an example. When this guy came in livid, I can't stand this horn. Give me a better horn. They said, well, you know, blank blank was just in here and we had to change his out so we know it's possible. And I thought, how much does that cost? And how often are you blowing your horn that it's offensive to you?
It is a shame that Wachowskis and J.C. Whitney no longer exist, because you could replace the horn with the old La Cucaracha horn.
See, the best horn I ever heard, and I think we've talked about this before, the classic long time ago Cadillac horns.
Oh,
that,
yes.
That was a... I'm a Cadillac, get out of my way, horn sound.
It was there, wasn't it? General Motors had basically copyrighted that sound.
Yep.
Kind of like on the...
It was kind of a four-tone horn.
Yeah. We found it on YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was like Harley-Davidson, the exhaust sound was theirs and theirs. You could tell it was a Harley coming down the road because it was kind of... copyrighted by them.
So your assignment, Tom, is next time you go out, you have to blow the horn and record the horn so we can hear the Hummer horn sound.
Have you given the Hummer up?
I don't have the Hummer anymore, but I will come across one, I'm sure, because I did not try the horn. I apologize.
You've got to start doing that, man, because some of these are weak and lame. I wish you'd seen the guy in the dealership, though. We were in the service department.
Yeah.
And he was just smoking. Smoke was coming out of his ears. I'm embarrassed by this horn.
Because he had a big honking vehicle, and it really was like a...
I paid $85,000 for this car, and I'm embarrassed. Okay, to each his own.
We also know he's the kind of guy that uses his horn a lot.
Exactly what I was thinking. He probably drives with his hand on the horn.
But that's another thing. And, we should make that a part of road tests. Hmm. How many times have we been in a vehicle, tried to hit the horn for whatever reason?
Finding it.
And finding where the point is that the horn engages.
Yeah.
That's another thing unto itself.
And a listener from 872 said it was a triple note horn for Cadillac. Lincoln had a four note horn on some of their cars in the 70s.
So Lincoln had bragging horn rights.
Lincoln was hornier than Cadillac was. All right. Stop. Don't look at me that way. Where are you in now? What did you give up the Hummer for?
The Nissan Leaf, which was redesigned for this year.
What a change, to go from the Hummer to the Leaf.
They are both electric, yeah, but it was an enormous change because, for one thing, the power disappeared. But Nissan's Leaf was completely redesigned, and it's really kind of a good car for now because we've lost the electric vehicle tax incentives.
Mm.
But they redesigned the vehicle. It no longer looks like a shoe. It now looks like a crossover.
That's always a good thing. In fact,
it is.
Is that their tagline? It no longer looks like a shoe.
It certainly should be.
So
yeah, I don't know why. Just a funny thing about early EVs, and there are a lot of these little EVs that were sold mostly in California. And for some reason, the decision was made early on that they were kind of punishment vehicles, and they would look like small hatchbacks, but they didn't deserve any real design. And the first Leaf was really unpleasant looking. The second one wasn't a whole lot better. But suddenly, it's a small crossover, and it's hitting exactly where the market is, I think. And that with an attractive price and really nice styling, this has an opportunity this year to matter a lot because people are going to be shopping the low end of the EV market.
Okay.
And what are we talking about price with this one?
The base prices are on $31,000. Oh, I drove a top line model that started at $39,000, came to $43,000 with options.
Wow, that's outstanding. So you could buy three of those versus the Hummer pickup.
Yeah.
Yes, you can.
Yeah. Of course, you don't get 1,100 horsepower.
Well, if you added up all the horsepower on all three of them, how much would you have?
You'd be under 1,000, wouldn't you, Tom?
You would, yeah. There's not a bunch of power here. Actually, the thing about that is horsepower numbers and EVs don't translate exactly, I think, into what people think is going to happen, at least by the seat of the pants. EVs deliver all their power right away, so throttle response is excellent. So around town, merging, passing, ducking through traffic, it all happens really easily with an EV. It's surprising how much power you get just tipping into the throttle.
Okay, before we get too far away from this, we said, and we've always talked about Tom's cartoons, and we gave Tom a homework assignment last time, since, for those of you who may not know, the whole concept of Tom's cartoons is he picks different types of music and he tests different vehicle sound systems to see how the sound system responds to different types of music. So your homework assignment was to come up with an audio system roundup of what you think is best and worst and what kind of music works best and what sound systems and what kind of cars. So what you got?
Yeah, I came up with the ones that I'm most exposed to. And I drive a lot of mainstream vehicles and sort of conventional luxury vehicles. I don't drive a lot of Bentley's, Rolls-Royce products, or even higher-end Mercedes products. So these are the sound systems that are more or less accessible to a lot of people. And I just I picked some for jazz, for rock, and for classical music.
Nice.
I don't know a lot about hip-hop, and I don't listen to it, so I can't speak to that. But one of the best systems out there is the Bowers & Wilkins system, which is optional on most Volvo products, and it's really outstanding. It's an expensive option. It can be several thousand dollars, but it is one of the best suited for the environment kind of sound systems. It really sounds right in a car, and it's just clean and it's accurate. And I think that the Bowers & Wilkins system is probably best for jazz, which means it'll probably do pretty good for classical music. Mm-hmm. And obviously, rock is going to be just fine. It's a very good system. But it has the nuance, I think, for good jazz.
Nice. Okay, so that's Bowers & Wilkins.
And would they have a specific, unique speaker system in the doors, in the headrests, in what?
There's a lot of speakers. It depends on the installation, so they're kind of custom for each one of the vehicles. One of the things about the Volvo Bowers & Wilkins systems is that there is a center channel, and I don't know if that's engaged in all the different modes that you can set the system for, but there is a very, it's good looking too. It's in the center of the dash, and it looks cool, and if someone gets in the car, you can point to it and brag. But it's interesting to have like a center channel small speaker, and it does a lot to fill the space.
Okay.
And again, for anybody who's saying, we know that you can adjust. There are settings in most cars today where you can set different settings for jazz, for talk, for whatever. That's true. But given that, there are some sound systems that just work better in certain car environments for specific kinds of music.
So what's the next one you talked about was what, with rock music?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a couple of years ago, Stellantis for Jeep and for Ram products brought out the Macintosh brand. And Macintosh people probably know it was a line of very expensive premium home audio stuff. They're licensing that name for these vehicles, and it is very, very good.
Hmm.
It is very loud. It is very powerful. It is very clean. And one of the beautiful things of this, too, is that the vehicles that it's in, mostly the Ram pickup and the Jeep Grand Wagoneer, have huge screens. And you can go to a mode where they're like VU meters, like classic-looking 70s VU meters that bounce around to the music. It's fantastic.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
It's a multimedia delight. But this system is extremely strong, 950 watts. In the Grand Wagoneer, it's 19 speakers with a 10-inch subwoofer. 19 speakers, yeah. Really, really strong, clean bass.
What, have they got some speakers in the hubcaps or what?
Yeah, where do they put them all? I don't know the answer to that.
Wow. Okay, so that's Macintosh. Uh-huh. Jeep and Ram. And is that typically something extra, or if you go with a Jeep Grand Wagoneer, that's what you're going to get standard?
It's standard and top trim levels.
Okay.
And I think from middle trim levels, you can option into it.
Cool. All right, next.
AKG, relatively new. It's in the Cadillac Escalade and a bunch of other Cadillac products. It's now in the Cadillac Electric Escalade as well. But AKG is kind of a new brand. And I don't know that they had done car audio before. They're licensed by Cadillac, but it is a very powerful system, either 19 speakers or 36 speakers.
36 speakers?
What?
36.
Well,
It's crazy. We may have spoke about this before. I think we did. The designers tuned the system around the average white band song, Pick Up the Pieces.
Right.
So it's really good with horns.
I really want to see a schematic of where the heck they put 36 speakers.
You know what, Steve? Our buddy in Florida just got the new electric Escalade.
You're right.
And he's a sound guy. He's got a recording studio. I bet he's taking it apart by now.
Tom Hoots.
Yep.
Yes. We'll have to ask him about this.
We'll get to ride around in that thing and turn it up real loud and blow a speaker.
We may have to do a video road test of that.
Yeah. Okay, so that's AKG.
AKG.
Okay, next.
This is a system that's been around for a while, and it's only in Lexus, and that's Mark Levinson. And it's typically optional for not a lot of money, like $2,000 or $3,000, which is a lot of money, but compared to these other systems, it's not very expensive. Mm-hmm. And it usually comes with upgrades to the navigation and touchscreen system. But this is a really clean, detailed finesse system, perfect for classical music. And Lexus products tend to be very quiet, so you can fully exploit the system's really, it's just a lot of clarity, a lot of nuance, really small sounds come through. It's what you would expect from a Japanese luxury maker.
I got to look into who this Mark Levinson dude is.
I don't know. The Mark Levinson system replaced the old Nakamichi system, which was also famously good.
Yeah. But you say this is a Japanese-made system. Why do we have a Mark Levinson?
And I know the name Mark Levinson, and I'm trying to
think of a radio guy named Mark Levinson.
No, there's...
Okay.
I'm going to have to look into that.
We will be investigating that. Do we have any more?
There is a system that just showed up a couple of years ago in Lincoln products, and that is Revel, R-E-V-L.
Oh.
And it's very, very good. Between 14 and 28 speakers. Very bright, very clean, very powerful. Perfect for classical or jazz music. It'd be great for rock, too, but it has the subtle nuance, I think, for jazz.
I know we when we were testing cars and we were looking for a new car, we were tried a couple of the Lincolns, and that was a good sounding system.
Mm-hmm. And I see you have a Lexicon as an honorable mention, and that's on the Genesis?
Different Genesis products. Yeah, Genesis bounces around depending on the product between Lexicon, Bang & Olufsen, and there's another system, too, that I think is house-branded that they use. They're all very good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Lexicon system is very strong.
The funny thing is, with our 20-year-old Cadillac, we still say it's a much better sound system than the 23 Genesis, which is good. But when I compare them,
the 23 Genesis is a really good sound system, and we found that it's best. They have a reference setting, and studio reference setting. We found that is the best. But the best system we've ever heard is the one that we have in our 2005 Cadillac, and that was a Bose system. And I was surprised as I was looking over your list.
No Bose.
Does Bose do car sound systems anymore?
They do, and they do a lot of them. My problem with Bose is I think their standards are a little wishy-washy. They can be very, very good in some products and fairly average in other products. And I think they over-license the name Bose. And it's a shame because I've heard some Bose systems that were completely mediocre and some that were very, very good. I'm driving, just got out of the Hyundai Sonata Hybrid Limited with the Bose system, and that one's good. That was pretty good. That's worthy of a licensed brand name.
Hmm. I just realized there was this another category we should have asked you to look into.
Oh.
And that would be AM radio sound.
Hmm.
And I know that that's a thing, and that a lot of manufacturers say, we don't want to do AM radio. But and keeping AM radio in cars is a whole separate discussion. But my point is, I've been very disappointed in a number of high-end cars that have great sound on FM, on Sirius XM, and all that, and then you go to AM, and they didn't pay for the computer chip that gives you the kind of sound that AM radio is putting out. And I mention that because, again, going back to our 2005 Cadillac, that sound system gives you the sound we're putting out from this studio. And it's a great that you go from AM to XM to AM to FM, and it all sounds really, really good. In some of the high-end cars now, you go from FM to XM to AM because they haven't put in the kind of, and it's literally, it's a computer chip that would make the difference.
It's funny that back in the 70s and into the 80s, if you bought a BMW or you bought a Mercedes and maybe an Audi, you would find Becker or Blaupunkt audio systems. And their AM reception was fantastic. And when the manufacturers, the German manufacturers, got away from using these brand name systems, the AM quality stunk. And part of the problem is that in Germany and in France and in Italy and really in England, they don't use AM radio anymore. They're all FM.
And I think, was it, where was it where they've, there is no more AM radio in one of those European areas.
It might be Germany.
I think you're right.
Germany's relatively small, and everything is sort of bracketed by mountains. So the actual area, like one FM station somewhere in the south of Germany, will cover most of the country with FM.
A listener wants you to know that your cartoons are warming the house up. So your work here is done.
We got to get to recalls, and there's a bunch of recalls going on this week.
Yeah, wow, we're starting the year hot here. we got a big one here from Ford, 273,000. So Ford, not breaking its streak. A bunch of Ford vehicles will not stay in park, basically. The integrated park module isn't working. It is a software problem that can be fixed over the air. Word will be going out soon. But it infects 22 through 26 Ford F-150 Lightning, that's the electric pickup. The Mach-E 24 through 26, that's their compact crossover electric vehicle. And the very popular Ford Maverick small pickup, 25 through 26. So a lot of vehicles to be covered here. It is an easy fix. It should be an over-the-air update, but you can drive it to a dealer too.
Did you hear about the 100,000 Ford vehicles being recalled for engine fires?
Engine fires I did not see for Ford. Is that a new one?
This came out yesterday. Engine block heaters.
I did see. I've
overheating,
got that here,
leading to short circuiting. And there have been some reports of underhood fires. Boy, that gets your attention. And there was a time when I was doing traffic reports, and it was like a daily thing to have a car fire.
Oh, yeah.
There's a car fire. Right there on the side of the road, car fire. And
I remember driving past car fires on the way to work. Yeah.
And it's really rare nowadays, unless you're driving by one of these Fords and over 100,000 of them are being recalled. These are vehicles ranging from 2013 to 2019. Your Ford Escapes and Focus and Lincoln MKCs are in that category. The MKCs, for example, are 15 and 16. The Escape is 13 to 18. The report says that consumers can identify defective block heaters by looking for coolant spots on the driveway or garage floor, a loss of cabin heat, powertrain unit overheating, or a warning indicator for a low coolant level.
We're Genesis
fans. This is a nice old school problem.
Yes, yeah. Right.
We're Genesis fans, but I was not pleased to see the Genesis recall that has to do with all of a sudden you can be driving along and you're not going to be able to see your dashboard.
Yeah, this is a really strange one because it's related to use of the HD radio, and they're suggesting that you don't use the HD radio until this problem gets fixed. But for some reason, the use of the HD radio will trigger a reboot of some subsystem that will make your instrument panel and I think the center console screen go black temporarily, which obviously is a less than ideal situation.
Yeah.
And it seems to affect virtually every single Genesis product.
But it's only in the comparatively recent model years, I think, like 25s and 26, yeah. I believe.
Mm. Yeah, that's what I've got here, yeah. And the fix will be available mid-March.
Are there any Toyota recalls? I thought I heard about one.
There is a Toyota recall, and it's relatively big, 162,000 Tundras and Tacomas, 2024 Ooh. And 2025 examples. The camera can get stuck on camera view, which means that you can't see other things on your center screen. So that's a problem.
Is that just a software update?
I don't know that for sure. I think it is just a software update.
Because with the Ford overheating, they said, when new engines are available, we'll replace them at no charge. I'm like, meantime,
uh-huh. Good luck.
Keep looking to see if you've got something dripping in your garage and if you feel no heat. That's very strange. Any other recalls to mention?
There's a really weird here, a very large Volvo recall, 413,000 units between 2021 and 2025. Virtually every single Volvo is affected by this, and it's another camera failing to go into this time the camera is failing to go into the reverse mode. So you put it in your backup, and you'll put it in the reverse, but you won't get a backup view.
Be interesting to find out if all of these cameras were made by the same manufacturer.
It would be.
Yeah.
It would be, and it's possible they are.
Yeah. Because mm-hmm. that's kind of, well, at least that's not a huge fix.
Yeah.
You can keep driving your car, and you don't have to wait 3 months for your notice and then pray for those 3 months that, yeah. you know, everything's okay.
Yeah.
The blatant plug light has just gone off. So if people want to check out Consumer Guide stuff, where do they go and what do they do and what do they see?
Oh, just visit us at consumerguide.com. My reviews of the Hummer and the Nissan Leaf are up there right now. Our 2026 Best Buy picks are there. And you can listen to the podcast on our homepage, or you can download the Consumer Guide Car Stuff podcast pretty much anywhere.
In 30 seconds, can you answer the listener who says it's Toyota's engine replacement issue? You got any info on that?
I don't. I know that they're scheduling them, and they are actually executing the replacements. I don't know anything about what backup times are like or how long this is going to take.
Okay. Well, Tom will be back.
You want to rephrase that? They're executing the replacements. You need a replacement? Come here.
Come here, Steve, Tom, Julian. We're executing our replacements. So.
Don't forget, you can also follow Tom on Blue Sky. He is Car Guy Tom at Blue Sky.
Yeah.
Well, Tom, thank you very much. Stay warm. And I guess the next time we speak, it will be on the cusp of the auto show.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lots to talk about there.
Okay. Well, stay warm. Talk to you soon.
All right. Take care, guys.
You too.